My name is Tom Jay, and I'm an alcoholic. If you're here for a workshop on the African-American experience in AA, you're in the right place. If not, you can stick around anyway if you like. I'd like to ask for a moment of silence in gratitude for AA's recoveries of the past 70 years. Now I'd like to read the AA preamble in English, if I can find it. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not aligned with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses or opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Now, to read the anonymity guidelines here, again, if I could find them in English, they're in seven languages. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. There may be some here who are not familiar with our traditions, and that's what I'm reading now, for personal anonymity at the public level. Thus, we respectfully ask that AA speakers and AA members not be photographed, videotaped, or identified by full name on audio tapes and in published or broadcast reports of our meetings. The assurance of anonymity is essential in our efforts to help other problem drinkers who may wish to share our recovery program with us. And our tradition of anonymity reminds us that AA principles come before personalities. CDs, audiographs of this, audio tapes of this meeting will be available at the tape sales booth in Hall E of the Convention Center. In keeping with our traditions of anonymity, tapes will list only the names of meetings, not the names of speakers. I'd like to, at this point, introduce our first speaker, who's Hazel S. from Ohio.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Hazel Lee Seif, and I am truly a grateful recovering alcoholic. Hi. You know, I've had some wonderful things happen to me, but this is one of the best. This is my first international, and this is an awesome and honored situation for me. I am extremely nervous, but once I get to rolling, I can go. You know, I came into the program to support someone. And while in there supporting someone, I got a rude awakening. I am an alcoholic. In denial for a few years. Couple of years. But, you know, this God of mine just does wonderful things. Now, I'm going to mention some dates that might have some significance to you all. I have a niece that died November 15th. Loved her with all my heart, and for a while I just didn't like this God of mine, because I just didn't know why he had to take her. She's beautiful, young, beautifully saved, young lady, 36 years old, died of breast cancer. But, you know, my coming into the program and starting to listen. Because I didn't want to be an alcoholic. I asked people, am I? And they said, no, I can't tell you what you are. But, you know, that pamphlet called 44 Questions. I got two of those one particular day. And I went through and I lied to myself on the first one. Then I said, okay, now, if this may be what I think it is, I better do the right thing. What do I do? So I answer truthfully. Then I start thinking, she was a great little volunteer. God didn't take her from here and leave me worthless, useless me to be here and do nothing. So I better do something. So I went back to the home group that I had been participating, that I had initially joined. And I started asking questions. What do I do now? How do I do this? What do I do now? Of course, you know, when I've gone to those meetings, the 12 steps are on the wall. I read those right away. I did those just like that, just like that. But then, you know, the reality sets in. And then you have to face the fact, oh, no, you can't do that like that. You really have to work with somebody. Because, see, I am a self-starter. I self-started myself to drinking. I also self-started my way into the rooms. And I'm going to do this my way. And we all know what our way or my way got me into. But thank God. Because I started asking questions. And the reason I mentioned November 15th, I was going through our 70-year book, and our co-founder died on that particular date. And that's another blessing, because he has to have a hand in this too. I believe all kinds of psychic things. I've traveled all through space and everything. I'm nuts. And I know I am, but I'm getting better. And I say that simply that I've traveled because, see, I love reading. I have traveled many places by reading. Inner space, outer space, to hell and back. Just from reading, I read everything, and I don't always. But this AA literature just, it's a blessing in my life. And this fellowship, and the people that are so willing to help you. I can ask the craziest questions, and they don't say, oh, that's stupid, Hazel. And, you know, I get so much help from the people in these rooms, or at home. I've been blessed that, and I'm going to just say his name, our delegate. I ask some crazy questions, he answers me. And some of the past delegates, I ask them crazy questions, they answer me. And I ask sometimes, can I go certain places? They say, yes, you can, but you can't say anything. You sit and listen. And, you know, it's a wealth of experience just going, listening to them, prepare for conventions and conferences. And I bite my tongue because, you know, I got an opinion on everything, but I can't always voice it. And I am learning to be still. Be still and listen. And because I am learning to be still and listen, I am learning so much. And I am so very thankful and so very grateful. Now, I know I'm supposed to be talking about the black experience. I'm glad you can see that, can't you? And I'm having a hell of a good experience in this program. I mean, it's really quite simple. I am enjoying myself. I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm not drinking. I'm going places, and I have many, many friends. Look at all of you. And you know, the beautiful thing about this, just walking up the walk with your people that have their names tagged up, you say, hi, Jess, hi, Chris. You know, the first time I came to a convention, somebody spoke to me, and I forgot I had a name tag on it. I looked startled. How did you know my name? You know, oh, man, this is just awesome. It is just awesome. I am so very, very grateful for Dr. Bob and Bill and everybody before me. And I want to always be there. Of course, I'm not always tactful, because one of my favorite lines is, deal with it. Deal with it. You made a choice. You know what the solution is. You do not want to do it or follow the suggestions, and deal with what you want to do. Do your thing. And when you get tired of dealing with your team, to come in and do our thing. I mean, that's the way it works. Come in and do our thing when you get tired of doing your thing, because we will welcome you gladly. Oh, man. I'm going to say something really stupid right now, because stupid things come out of my mouth also. I am so blessed to have this 31-year-old son that has traveled the world. And I told him that I was coming here, and I said, I'm very in the peace of mind. Don't worry about it. You can talk. Because you talk to fence posts, you talk to trees, you talk to anything and anybody. He says, the problem is, if you have a time limit, you should take your watch off and lay it down. I didn't do that. But if you all start looking for it, I know my time is up. But he said something that I just kind of shared it with Dean, and I'm going to say it anyway. He travels the world, and he goes every place. And he is a very dark-complected young man. And I told him that it's the black experience in AA. He says, Mom, the United States is the only place that always looks at black and white. I said, and he said, but Ma, remember, you are a citizen of the world. You're a human being. And just talking with Gene, the requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. It doesn't say you have to be black, white, purple, blue, green, whatever color you is. When you've had enough of it, you will gladly scoot your butt in here in a hurry. And then if you want to stay here, you will do what has to be done. And, of course, you know, it doesn't say you should, but there's some damn well better. Oops, there's some damn well better. See, sometimes I put my foot in my mouth, but it's better than putting a drink into my mouth. I hope I haven't embarrassed my people from Area 55 Toledo, but you know me, I say stuff. But I Hazel speak. I don't speak like nobody else. I Hazel speak. I'm Hazel, and I speak the way Hazel speaks, and that's the way it is. You know, one thing I am really learning in this fellowship is to thine own self be true. Be yourself. I can't be phony. I cannot pretend like I'm like Joe. No, I don't want to be like Joe. I want to be like Jane. I do, but I don't. With everything, I have to be me, and I am going to be me, and I'm going to be the best me that AA will allow me to be. And, you know, the sky is the limit as long as I do the steps. And I truly do believe in a God of my understanding. Well, I tell you the coincidence that happened really yesterday to me. I came in Thursday, I walked around here so long, my feet hurt, and I had on some shoes that were not appropriate for walking on concrete like that all day. Plus, I'm not a spring chicken, too, as you can tell. So when I got home, my feet hurt, my leg muscles ached. So I was going to pamper myself, and that's what I did yesterday. And I'm going to come over here for a 3 o'clock meeting, but the shuttle from my hotel didn't leave again until 3 o'clock. So I got here, and I missed the meeting that I wanted to go to, and I walked into the hospitality room to get something to eat, and I walked past a whole bunch of people. And I spotted a lady at a table all by herself. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go sit with her. And again, God just miracles in my life. I walked back over to her table and I said, I bet you're getting ready to get up and leave, aren't you? And she says, no, I'm not. So I asked if I could join her. So she and I sat and talked for a few minutes. Her husband came and we laughed and talked some more. And you know what? I found out she's a minister. God led me to this God-fearing woman, just so I could sit there and talk with her, and just, it wasn't a lot of sharing, it was just a lot of just honest talking. Of all the people that I could have sat at a table with, I sat down with her. And you know, it's one of those things he does for you, what you can't do for yourself. You can't always be picky. Because if I follow his will, I'm going to be all right. And it's just one of those things. I got those pimples when I found out she was a minister. Because I truly do believe in a higher power, because if it wasn't for him, I would not be here today, because I am blessed. I've had 3 strokes. And because of prayers and good neurologists and therapists, I'm able to stand in front of you today and say, Lord, I am so very grateful, because I do believe in this trust God, clean house, and help others. Because I am being helped every day, just by standing here, just by being here. And I thank you for just letting me share. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Hazel. I neglected to congratulate those brothers and sisters of mine who passed the 9 o'clock test and were able to get here. I don't think it was an accident that it was scheduled so early. Let's see who was really dedicated. We're going to have our next speaker, Gene H. from New York.
Good morning. My name is Gene. I'm an alcoholic. And I thank God and the members of AA for my sobriety up to this moment. This is the most important moment of my life, because my life adds up to right now. That's where I am. And right now, I want to thank the committee, the International 2005 International Committee, for inviting me to share my experience, strength, and hope here. Don't pay any attention to who I am. Pay attention to the message. I'd like to thank my wife for attending me once again. Stand up, Paulie. This is our 6th international. And by the grace of God, I had to stand up because I'm a very lucky fellow. After being married 19 years, I was taken a while out of my house in handcuffs, drunk as I could be. But when I got to AA, there was an old-timer here who said, AA adds years to your life and life to your years. I just heard it, but it came true for me. Because being taken out of my house after 19 years and coming to AA. Last December 4th, I was married 50 years. Okay. Now, I have been reduced from being a genius to a retard. Maybe in terms of sharing, I'll let you know what that is, because they don't care where I come from. Yale, Park Avenue, Park Bench. You got a problem with alcohol in the right place. But before I say something about me and my recovery, that rhymes, doesn't it? Yeah. I got to get a note to the newcomer or the person who was here and went back and got back. If you go back out there, I'm encouraging you, please stay. This is an incurable disease. You know, it's going to be with me for the rest of my life. But stay. Because if you go out, all you do is change your anniversary date and suffer some more. But more importantly, this man and woman had a child. The only thing that came out was a head. The head lived. At the age of 18, the father took the head to the bar, set the head up in the bar, and told the bartender, "Get a head of drink." Bartender looked at this head and said, "Oh, shucks." But he knew that head was alive. The eyes were flashing with anticipation. And he bought a drink, and the father poured the drink down the head's mouth. A body appeared under that head. Father said, "Bring him another drink." Bought the second one. Father poured that down. Said, "Arms appeared." After two drinks, there was a whole human being standing in at that bar. Into the bartender, "The third one's on me." Remember that? I'll never forget all the free drinks I had. So the bartender brings his free drink, and now the head becomes a whole human being after two drinks. Picks the drink up himself. It could be herself. It's a fellowship of men and women. Pour the drink down his mouth, and the drink hit the gut. The entire body, including the head, disappeared. Now, if you're going to be anything like me, and you don't want to die in here without a drink, don't take a chance on the last chance. Quit while you're ahead. I had to do this because I'm trying to think about what I'm going to say next. But more or less, I drank some alcohol and I drank some more. Things started happening to me, like I got drunk, got arrested for drunken driving, had a head-on collision, had blackouts. That does not mean I was black and I was out. I have to put that in there. And as I said before, I had trouble in the household. Wife had to get an order of protection for my hands. And I came home drunk as I could be one night. And I started something in there. This is my last drunk. I don't spend any time talking about drinking, because I don't drink anymore. You may not understand that yet, but you will. You keep coming and getting to this program of recovery. And in that melee, my wife called me an alcoholic. That is a dirty name. And in that melee, my son came down and did what he's supposed to do, protecting his mother. He split my skull open with something. I don't know what it was. So there I'm, drunk as I could be, head bleeding. My mother-in-law lived with us. She called the police. And you know, the police have been regular visitors to my house over the years. And I was at the door. I said, "What are you doing here?" Because I didn't like authority anyway. And they said, "Somebody reported a disturbance in your house." I said, "Mister, this is my property. Get the you-know-what off my property immediately before I call the police." They looked at me like I was crazy, and they left. But I was not at the door this night. My mother-in-law let them in. And it's hysterical to my wife, where she found that order of protection, showed it to them. They said, "You're under arrest." They took me out of the house and handcuffed into the hospital, sewed up my head, into the criminal court. Next day, the judge put me out and said, "You stay out of that house until you show up in family court. You finish there, you come back here and stand trial in criminal court." I like to call that a 2-for-1 drug. I left my house, went to my mother's house in Harlem, where I was raised. 2 days later, I accepted the fact I had a problem with alcohol. Not only did I accept it, I was always aware of it. I accepted it. And I took the action. I found the number for Alcoholics Anonymous. I had never been here. I called, and they gave me direction to my first AA meeting. I went to my first AA meeting in the St. Nicholas Group in Harlem, April 21st, 1973, with a desire to stop drinking. I had never been to AA. In that meeting, I learned two very important things. I went there with an open mind to be teacher. I'd finally given up the denial, and you know denial is not a river in Africa, don't you? They told me if I didn't pick up one drink one day at a time, I couldn't get drunk. Now, that was music to my ears because I thought it was always the last drink that causes trouble. This is the first one. And they said the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. Now, you know, over these 32 years, staying away from drink, you know what it's done? It has helped me to get more and more freedom from the bondage of self. Always remembering that I am still eligible to get drunk. But I stay away from the first drink, I can't get drunk. So, staying away from one drink, one day at a time, I have avoided all of the consequences that can come from drinking, from all the people drinking in the world right now. That's why I live in the now. To stay away from the drink, I have great gratitude to know that I will not suffer from the drug, alcohol, or all the consequences that come from drinking. Now, after that first meeting, I did not know where the second meeting was. But by the grace of God, and I can talk about God now, because before AI, I didn't have no intense God consciousness and all that, and because I played God. You know? And so I didn't have any God consciousness. I do believe, though, that this man was put there for me. When I finished talking to that man on the phone, he said, "If you need my help, call me." Gave his telephone number. And that telephone number is what I needed to get to the second meeting. Incidentally, I've been a member of my group for 32 years. It's the St. Albans group in Queens. And we're going to keep the door open for you to come anytime you like, because that's my job today. Well, I called this man. He came and started taking me to meetings. And meetings. And meetings. I was blessed. This man had 19 years when I got here. And come September, he'll be celebrating 51 years. And during this time of his sacrifice of time to help me and so forth, we sort of just got right down to it. He said, "Are you an alcoholic?" I said, "What are you talking about? I can't even stop drinking. I'm only third with tradition." And he said, "If you're an alcoholic, you're in critical condition." I said, well, how do I know?" He said, "You can die in here without a drink." Well, he got my attention. I didn't know what he's talking about, but he got my attention. He said, "Don't get excited. They knew you were coming, so they wrote a book about you in 1939. Called Alcoholics Anonymous. In that book, they put three chapters, 12 spiritual principles that would help me to recover from alcoholism and to grow spiritually in relationship with a higher power." And I said, "Where do I get this book?" He said, "It costs about $5, less than a fifth in the last year lifetime." Yeah, I had my $5 ever since he told me, but I was in here 11 days when he took me to Grinch Village Group, and I got that book. He said, "Hold it. I want you to start in chapter 5, how it works." And he said, gave me a guideline for reading AA literature. You know that you won't find anybody's name on any AA literature, especially the big book. But he said, treat the big book as a message. All the people, Bob and Bill, the co-founders, and the 100 people who wrote that first book are all dead. I presume they're all dead. But they are alive in the blessed word. And he says, when you open up that cover to chapter 5, make believe as you read Bob and Bill, the first one I know talking to you. Gene, rarely has anybody failed with early problem our path. They're talking to me through the framework. Gene, we beg of you to be filled and thorough from the very start. Gene, we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it's too much for us. Gene, there's one with all power, that one is God. May you find him now. And he says, Gene, if you don't learn to let go and let God, absolutely the results are nil. Nil means nothing. And he had me read that paragraph, and Hazel mentioned 44 questions. A defines everything. I didn't have to figure out anything. He says, you don't analyze nothing in AA. You didn't analyze no liquor bottle label. You become aware of it, accept it, do it exactly as it is. And he gave me a guideline for getting through the 12 steps. He said, I want you to read it out of the big book, out of the 12 and 12, and answer two questions. What does the step mean to you? What does it ask you to do? Then he said, if you're going to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you're going to become responsible to help keep this fellowship united. So you're going to need to know 12 traditions. I had to do both at the same time. And I use that black and white pamphlet, 12 Traditions Illustrated, because it has cartoons in it. So as I proceeded to get this program recovery in it, it was very simple, because I only had to become aware of it. Could I admit to myself when I drink a life? Yes. I told him that. He said, on to the second. He said, you believe AA can help you stop drinking, stop that insanity? Yes. On to the third step. Now when it came to the third step, I said, how do I get a God? He said, all you got to do is ask for one. And the way he said it simply enabled me to accept the third step. I made a decision to turn my life and will over to care of God, as you understand. He said, it becomes easy because you don't have to understand what you're doing. Just accept it and start using it. Then when you feel like you get the results, that's when you understand it. Another reason why I made that decision to turn my life and will over to care of God is because I didn't want to continue with Christian Brothers. Christian Brothers is a drink job. Then he said, well, this disease is so cunning, baffling, and powerful, and insidious, and incurable. I want you to pay attention to what's going on in the fourth step. Now, for myself and the guidance I got, I simply had to find two of my experiences for each of the seven deadly sins, pride, anger, greed, gluttony, lust, and being slow, and describe the following. What happened? How was I affected? Who did I harm when I acted out on it? Write the name and harm done. Who harmed me in this process of that? Write the name and harm done to me. Write 20 positive things about myself. 3 of the worst things I did. End of the initial self-examination of my thinking. The disease starts with my thinking. For example, anytime I'm uncomfortable, the disease is starting. Because that's my negative reaction to some person, place, or thing I don't like. and or some person plays the thing I refuse to accept, I become diseased with myself by virtue of the negative thought. And that's the beginning of the disease. And so consequently, if I don't arrest this disease with the help of God and another human being, I act out. And every time I act out on thought that makes me uncomfortable, my behavior is negative. And then, of course, the result is I can pick up a drink, setting off a physical compulsion, the mental obsession to drink to excess. One is too many, 1,000 not enough, and the end point can be jail, institutions, and death, starting with the thought. And so consequently, I got that straightened out. I've been practicing ever since. Then I find out I get more freedom from bondage of self when I get able to forgive those people who harm me, getting release from anger, resentment, retaliation, and revenge. I get more relief when I was able to make direct amends for my behavior, freedom from guilt and remorse of my behavior, not to do that again. And so therefore, I picked up on the St. Francis of Assisi prayer, a straight jacket for doing the right thing. And as a result of that, I'm now ready to start improving my conscious contact with God through prayer and meditation. He told me, when you meditate, sit still. Don't go out and buy no books on meditation. You might levitate your behind out of here and can't get back. Be quiet. And then he said, the ultimate is what's going to happen to freedom of bondage itself, is that you're going to find a way to pass on this message of 12 steps and 12 additions through that beginner who walks through your home group door. And you can't be a beginner but once in AA, because if you're here and came back, you know too much to be a beginner a second time. So throw the towel in the cupboard. Now, with regard to these traditions, I only cite out the 12th tradition, anonymity being the spiritual foundation of all of our traditions, ever remind me to place principles before personalities. And consequently, I don't care if you're from Yale, Paul Avenue Park, Ben, blue, brown, black, alcoholism knows no color. And so consequently, I've been a member of my group. I was a member, an active member in the service for 10 years as a district committee member and so forth. But all of a sudden dawned on me one day, I better get back to my home group where the alcoholics are coming and be ready to pass on 12 steps and 12 traditions. Now, for the last 30 years, I developed a way of passing on 12 steps and 12 traditions that people ask me. And it's a guideline that I made up for myself. And so consequently, when we finish 12 steps and 12 traditions, the person's going to know how to practice them, 5 and 7, 10, 11, 12. They're also going to know how to pass it on. They're going to know how to conduct meetings. They're going to know how to work with beginners. And this is what I carry with me from day to day. I'm still working with alcoholics. And I'm enjoying it. And I figure that's enough for me because I'm not in here to promote AA. I do really do. I have to be honest with you. When I conduct beginners meetings, that's sin. Do you have a home group? They say, no, join this one. It's the best one in AA. And I've gotten people to join AA just like that. I don't care where I am. We get them in here somehow, wherever. Now, I don't know what the time is, but I'm going to share a couple things with you. And one is that I am an alcoholic from now on, recovering alcoholic. From the day I was born up to now, I have up to right now, and part of my freedom from bondage itself is I don't dwell in the past. I don't have no third parties in my conversation. And I keep that door open for that alcoholic who's born to walk in there Monday I won't be there because I'll still be here. But next Thursday, there's an alcoholic who might walk in there. I better be there for them just like they were here for me. And I'd like to acknowledge my grand sponsor, Liz, over there, who's got 53 years coming up. I have developed a little prayer for myself. See, there's a guy named Dap. He used to be called Dap, Devilish Alcoholic Personality, sitting on both my shoulders, ready to send me to hell. But I gave him a new name, a cheerleader for hell. He's always putting the negative stuff in there to try me to buy into it and go crazy. But I developed this myself to ask God, as I understand him, for help in advance. God, stay with me all day long so I won't go wrong. And I can remain strong to do thy will always so I can become what you want me to be. Amen. Now, I'm going to end this up. I think I did my 20 minutes, right? This brand new newcomer got 4 months in the program. Oh, man, he had learned the 12 steps and 12 traditions. He's running out after 90 days and get up and tell you a story. He's running out. He's talking about 12 steps and traditions. Just talking now. He ain't got no experience behind it, but he's talking. 2 old-timers took him out on a trip. This is a message for me, the old-timers, and the newcomers. These 2 old-timers took him out on a trip, a half a mile off the shore. One of the old-timers asked the other old-timer, did you bring the coffee? He said, no, I forgot. He said, I'll go get it. He jumped out of the boat, walks on the water. Gets going, walks back on the water. And this newcomer says, oh, shucks, these guys can walk water. And when he got back with the coffee, the other one said, did you remember to bring the sweetened load? He said, no, I just got the coffee. He said, you got the coffee? I'm going to get the sweetened load. The other old Tommy jumps out of the boat, walks on the water, gets the sweetened load, walks back. This is too much for the brilliant newcomer. He said to himself, if these guys can walk water, so can I. He jumps up expecting to walk water, but he's going down to his death. A la old timers saw this, and they were there to pull him back into the boat before he went down to his death. Got him back to his senses.
It could be her senses, as a fellowship of men and women.
Looked him dead in the eye and said, do you think we ought to show him where the rocks are? The 12 steps, the 12 traditions are my rocks. They didn't help me walk no water, but they helped me trudge this happy destiny to the joy of living with God and you. Thank you.
This is moving along rather swimmingly, to use a black expression. We have one more speaker who was unable to be here, and we have a substitute who graciously volunteered, actually, to speak, Norma Jean C. from Hawaii.
Hi, I'm Norma Jean, a recovered alcoholic, and I'm just grateful to be here. This is my fourth international, and what can I say? Life has taken on a new meaning. Someone said to me this morning, said, Norman Jean, did you wake up grumpy this morning? I said, no. I just let him sleep. I told my husband, I said, drop me off, you know, drop me off by the convention center. And anyway, I ended up over by the stadium. So he said, well, I told you I'll meet you over here. I said, but I was let off over there. He said, but over here. I said, but you let me off over there. See, we live in a two-story house. His story and my story. See, 22 years ago, we decided to become one. And we went on a honeymoon to decide which one. I'm not here to talk about a black experience, because we all are spiritual beings, really. I had to go through the process to find that out. I'm a spiritual being that lives in a body, that is in possession of my soul, all because of a spiritual awakening. And, you know, I live like today. I don't exist. Because if I'm living, the disease exists. And if I'm existing, the disease is living. You know, I start drinking at 32. Somebody said, girl, 32 years old, you start drinking? I said, yeah. They said, you was an old fool. And see, I've actually lived three lives in one lifetime. I had 32 years of self-delusion, which led me into 7 years of chronic drinking and using. And now I'm standing behind this podium with 15 years and 8 months. I can share with you this morning that I have recovered from that mental abusing. It was not about my drinking. It was not about my drinking. It was about my thinking. They told me that 10% of the disease was my drinking. And 90% was my thinking. You know, we think, and then we drank. It's somebody said, Norma Jean, define an alcoholic. I said, an alcoholic is a person who keeps drinking after he's drunk. I don't know about you. I didn't have the ability to stop drinking, even though I tried. You know, guilt, shame, and remorse was the driving force of my nature. I was so ashamed of myself, of what I had become overnight, an alcoholic. I wanted to be a mom, and I couldn't be one. I wanted to be a wife, and I couldn't. Because I couldn't stop drinking. So, you know, those 7 years of chronic drinking and using, I ended up in that treatment center for the last time. That was my third treatment center. And I walked in that treatment center, 90 pounds, and I looked like a toothpick with lips. I drank up my hair. My hair was so short, you could read my mind. My husband said to me, he said, baby, you know, why do you think that you still look good? This is the only disease that will tell you that you look good when you really don't look good. I said, baby, I still look good. I still look good. I came in fourth place, Miss Connecticut. I still look good. He said, no, baby, you don't look good. You look like you have fallen out of an ugly tree. And hit every branch on your way down. You don't look good. Oh, he was not too nice at times. But you know something? That man loved me unconditionally. And I found out one thing about love. Love is not love until it's unconditional. And matter of fact, I called him Mr. Unconditional. Because he stood the test of time. He stood by his vows of holy matrimony. And just before we got married, I picked up and started drinking. I married him for better, and he married me for worse. So I tell you, I stand here today to share about a spiritual experience, not a black experience. Because one thing about God, he don't put labels on people. See, I have... I am so great. I had to come here, you guys. I had to come here to find that out, though. And see, my father's a minister, and he's been a minister ever since I was 5 years old. But see, and he drugged me. Can you imagine? That man drugged me at 5 years old. He drugged me. He drugged me to church on Sunday morning. He drugged me to church on Sunday afternoon. And he drugged me to church on Sunday evening. He drugged me against my own will. And see, and out of the my four siblings, or three siblings, I was the outcast. I was the troublemaker. I was the heathen. I was the white sheep. In the family. And you know, and I'm still somewhat the white sheep. You know the reason why? Because I don't go to church. You know, no offense when I say that to you. I found everything I need here today. And I found it in the 12 steps. But I had to go on into more literature. Because the big book says we only know a little. And I had to find the root to that big book. And I found it. And when I found it and I surrendered in treatment, I surrendered. I just totally surrendered. It was a total surrender from my heart. And when I found out where the big book came from, and I started living this, I started living the steps, I said, mm-hmm. I see God just snuck one in on me. And so, like, when I got to the treatment center this time, I had a spiritual thirst that I could not quench. I had a spiritual hunger that I could not feed. I had a spiritual disease that I could not heal. I had been snake bit by the disease of alcoholism. And that venom, it ran through my soul and my body and my spirit. And that's why I know today that we have a spiritual solution to a spiritual problem. Big Book says no human power could have set me free. And that's why I know that we are truly the modern day miracles of this day and time. And so when I got to the treatment center this time, I dragged up in there and I was just, oh God, I was totally defeated, complete defeat, 90 pounds, and I looked like buckwheat going astray. And so this time when I got in that treatment, you know, I had a room to myself, and I did the only thing that was left for me to do. It was a total surrender from here. And I said, you know something, God? I can't do this by myself. Something happened that night, October 13th, 1989. I was struck sober. I was struck clean. I had a spiritual experience. In other words, God came in that room and he put his super on top of my natural. Right in the midst of my high, God showed up and he said, hi. And from that day to this day, I have not had the desire to drink or to use or to pop pills. all because of having had a spiritual awakening as a result of all these steps. I'm coming from the hip with both barrels smoking. This program has done for me with the telephone booth, Dipper Clark Kent. It gave me power. And see, lack of power 15 years ago was my disease, and unmanageability was my problem. And see, the word powerless was mentioned one time in the big book or in the 12 steps. But the word power is mentioned 66 times in the big book of AA. So having had a spiritual awakening, this program has turned me into the pistol packing mama of AA. See, power could seize nothing without a command. And I was willing to go to any lengths to demand and command that power over that mental state that precedes the first drink, drug, or hit. And I walked in the rooms 28 days later from treatment, and I walked in with a big book in one hand, and I had a marker in the other. And I walked in and I said, you know something? I'm never going to drink again. This was in Orange County, California. And somebody yelled out and said, shut up and sit down and listen. And see, I walked in, though, with the spiritual experience, and I walked in with 5 steps in my heart, not in my head. So when people talk about treatment centers, I like you to know I am a byproduct of. But they did sentence me to A&A. And they gave me a book that was already marked up when I got here. So I want to talk about power is the ability to get results. And power is the ability to get the job done. Just like, you know, I told God, Lord, I want to go to International in Toronto, and I would like to be a seeker, you know, because I have recovered knowledge of your will, and I need your power to carry it out. And here I am. That's how it works. I'd rather know a few things for sure to be confused about a whole lot of things. But what I do know is that this program, it works. It works in spite of me, it works in spite of you, and countless others, it works. It took a nobody and turned me into somebody that's willing to share with anybody about the recovered mind and body. I have recovered. I'm not, they say you never cured. You know what it tells me? Never cured. I can never drink. Now why would I want to pick up and start drinking? When alcohol is like making love to a gorilla. You're not done until the gorilla's done. Now why would I want to pick that gorilla up? When I have knowledge, when I have understanding, I have application, I have a daily reprieve, which equals power. You know, we have a motor coach. We've been blessed. And this motor coach, you know, this morning I turned on a generator. Yeah. And the generator, what's the purpose of the generator? Is to change one form of energy, that diesel, and it takes it through the generator. And it changes into electricity. So I get my air conditioners, coffee maker, toaster. I iron my clothes, all those wonderful appliances. And the same thing with this program is to change one form of energy, morbidity, negativity, and going through the process, especially 6 and 7, into positivity, spirituality. And see, alcohol had turned me into a moral midget, spiritual dwarf. And a mental pygmy. And see, now today, because of the change, I have unconditional love, joy, peace, happiness, faith, courage, and hope, integrity, dignity, self-esteem, and self-worth. I did not have those characteristics when I walked in these rooms. All because I came to believe that this power could restore me to sanity. You know, step 2 is, to me, I think is the program, but I had to live all 12 of these steps to find that out. That is the program. Came to believe that this power could restore me to sanity. And what is sanity? Sanity is madness turned into good use. Sanity is seeing a great reality as it really is and acting appropriately. And, you know, I just can't believe, because when it comes to the word recovered, you know, that's one thing about an alcoholic. Alcoholic is the only person I know that will challenge you about your experience. You ain't recovered. See, you go anywhere else, you ain't going to find people walk up to other people and say, they hear the experience and say, no, I don't believe that happened to you. receive recovery means that I'm wholesome today. Have a physical recovery, a mental recovery, an emotional recovery, thank God. A moral recovery, as well as a spiritual. As I must say, too, a verbal recovery. For 5 years, I used to tell white folks and all white men, I used to kiss my black butt. I don't do that today. Because I have a verbal recovery. I don't know why God put me in all white fellowship. I had to grow up real quick, okay? But the word recovered. Once a mind has been stretched into a new idea, that mind will refuse to return to its original dimension. Because a mind that is imbued with absolute truth is a mind of restoration, regeneration, and revelation. My mind is no longer where the disease left me 15 and a half years ago. All because I came to believe that this power could restore me to sanity. See, I run on that God power today, you guys. I don't run on the gorilla power of selfishness and self-centeredness and dishonesty. This disease itself is so selfish by nature. Alcohol is not my problem. Drugs is not my problem. It was my selfishness and self-centeredness and dishonesty driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, and self-deception. And I stepped on the toes of others. And, you know, I truly, selfishness, a selfish and self-centered couple was sitting in their den in their beautiful home. And the husband said, the wife said to the husband, she was very rich. She said, you know something, if it wasn't for my money, she said, this house wouldn't be here. She said, if it wasn't for my money, she said, a Rolex on your wrist wouldn't be here. She said, if it wasn't for my money, that Mercedes out there in the driveway wouldn't be here. And then the husband jumped up and said, if it wasn't for your money, I wouldn't be here. This is a very selfish and self-centered disease, and you don't have to be an alcoholic. You know what I'm saying? Like my father, they finally start respecting this program. Because you know something? Because it's power and demonstration in my life. That's the only way I started getting my respect. I had to start showing them that, you know, there's some power behind me, Dad, and there's some demonstration in my life just by me standing behind this podium. I came here. Knowledge of your will, God, and the power to carry it out, to carry this recovery, the experience of redemption. Because if the mind can't conceive it, and if the heart can't receive it, the will has achieved it. So my dad said to me, yeah, this is a shame. He fronted me off in front of at least about 15 people. And I left Hawaii, which I didn't want to leave, Christmas. And I ended up, you know, in my father's home with all the relatives, the nieces and nephews, and my brothers, and, you know, siblings. And he said, Norman Jean, everything got quiet. I want you to admit to everybody in this household right now that you hate the church. Those were his words. Now admit to them right now that you hate going to church and you hate the church. Now can you imagine? This is what he did. Now everybody's eyes turned in on me. And then I looked up. I said, Dad. I looked him dead in his eyes. I stared at him like a cow staring at a new gate. I said, Dad, I am the church. I am the church. I am the temple of the church, Daddy. It got so quiet you'd be a rat pee on cotton. You'll never confront me again about that. Because having had a spiritual awakening as a result of all these steps is a demonstration of conduct, character, and conversation. See, there's four dimensions in recovery. 1, 2, and 3 enable a divine shift in the spirit of a new heart. The gorilla energy left and the God energy came inside of me. Step 4, 5, 6, and 7 enable a divine shift in the spirit of a new mind. The psychic change. The supernatural enema of the head. Well, I don't know about you, but I need a divine laxative of the mind. 8, 9 enable a divine shift in the spirit of the human race. I'm no longer apart from, but I'm a part of the human race. And not just in these rooms. I'm a player. I'm a real player. what is gained called life. And 10, 11, and 12 enable a divine shift in the spirit of the universe, love and service. And that's how it works for me. I had to see one step cannot exist without the other. I need all these steps in order for me to have this spiritual experience. And I walk every day, always, since I've been here, I have never experienced a broken relationship with a God of my understanding since I've been here. Because I started living these steps. Because to talk about these steps is one thing, but to experience these steps is another. So I crossed over from the world of happenstance where the mind is throwing the dice. I drink today, but I'm sober tomorrow. That's a world of duality of alcoholism. I'm married today, you know, and I'm divorced tomorrow. I divorced on Monday and I remarried that following Saturday. And Mr. Curtis Carter, will you stand up? And, you know, that's the world of happenstance, you know. I love you today, but I hate you tomorrow. The world of alcoholism. You know how people are? They'll love you today and they'll turn around and hate you tomorrow. Just by what you wear. What you got that on for? Somebody's relating. So, you know, and so I had to cross over from that world of alcoholism. I crossed over into the world of the spirit. And what I received was non-duality. And the world of the spirit is the kingdom. And the seventh book talks about the ultimate experience is the kingdom of God is within. And see, today, because I got the kingdom of God within me, which what I have basically is eternality, immortality, infinity, nothing missing, nothing broken, nothing lacking. I have virtue, I have peace, I have prosperity, completeness, wholeness, and fulfillment. Hello. All because I came to believe. I get to run around the country, I get to run around the world. You know, and I share my experience, faith, and hope. And see, but I had to use his knowledge, because knowledge of his will and the power to carry it out. Because who was going to give me a podium but God? My mouth too big. He told me, you got a big mouth. Shut up. My mother and father told me that too. Norma Jean, you got a big mouth. And when I came to the program and when I started working these steps and I discovered my talents, gifts, and my abilities, which was always there, but I didn't know they were there. Because when you've been told to shut up all your life, you ain't got nothing to say. And then my mother and father, they always label everyone. Them white folks down the street. Them Puerto Ricans in back of us. Black folks on the other side of us. You know, they always got a label on everybody. So when I came to the program and I discovered my talents, gifts, and my abilities and my ingenuities, 2 years ago, you know what I told them? I went home to Connecticut. I said, Mom, Dad, all my life you guys never told me I had a gift of articulation. I said, I had to go in an all-white meeting. Maybe one ink spot. And the white folks told me the first week in AA, Norma Jean, you have the gift of articulation. I said, Dad, white folks had to be the ones to tell me and validate me about my gifts and my abilities and my ingenuity. Y'all told me to shut up. One more time, it got so quiet, you could hear that rat lift up his lid. I am so grateful for the validation I get today from God of my own personal understanding. And I want to share on this experience and I'll shut up. You know, it's funny. I believe that there's four major choices that we make in this life that will shape our destiny. You know, and I believe all the other choices that we make are really, you know, it's not really of significance. And like it would not have made much of a difference if I had not showed up because someone else would have been here right now speaking. All right? So, basically what happened, I believe that the first choice is when I picked up the map of the United States at 23 years old in Connecticut after being around my people. And I looked at the map of the United States. I don't know where's the farthest point from. Where's the farthest point from Connecticut? And so I traced my finger across that map. I said, California, here I come. And I arrived in California. That was 31 years ago. That's when I was young. Fine and tender. Things have changed. Lumps and bumps. Holes and moles. Keloid, hemorrhoid, thyroid, and fibroids. So that was one decision. And the second decision I made is when I said yes to Mr. Curtis Carter. You know, been married to him now, and he loved, like I said, through all that hell we went through. And the third decision is, it happened a year ago, is when I cut my ties with California. I said goodbye, California, after 30 years. It was that time. And my fourth decision is when I said, this is the major one, yes, to chapter 5, so that I can enjoy myself as being a miracle of a recreation of a new mindset. It's my mind that needed power. I need some power over my thoughts, positive power over my thoughts. And, you know, and when we left California, you got that moment of clarity. I believe that you get moment of clarity and, you know, major ones. And I was always kind of wanting out of California. The first week, I told God, you know, I told my mother, I said, Mom, I don't think I'm going to be here. I said, I'm not going to let California be my resting place. No offense, nobody. Just that, you know, I just kind of always wanted out of California. But the California became my Egypt. It was my Egypt. And so I just couldn't believe that California gave me the program, gave me the fellowship, and most of all, gave me a God of my own personal understanding. So when it was time to say goodbye, it was my husband's revelation. He said, you know something? He went through an illness. And he said to me, after the illness, he was recuperating. And so he said to me, I just got a revelation this morning. He just got out of the hospital. I said, what is that? He said, revelation is for me to sell the business. I said, well, ain't that a kick? I said, I've been trying to get you to sell that business for 10 years. He said, it's easy for you to say, that's easy for you to say, you ain't worked in 20 years. It's all about me. So anyway, then the next morning I got a revelation too. He said, what's that? I said, it's time to sell the house. Anyway, we was in Australia. I had the opportunity to speak in Australia at their convention. And after the speaking at the convention, they called us, the real estate broker called us up and said, Norman Jean, Curtis, we just put your house on the market. And they outbid that home, your home, $70,000 more than what you anticipated. And he said, guess what? And it sold within 3 hours. See? Knowledge of his will. And then we sold the business a month later. So we sold a house, sold the business, sold the purple and white motor home, sold the cat, sold the dog. And we turned around, we bought a 43-foot diesel Prussian motor coach. 2 bathrooms, his and hers. 3 pop-outs, 3 flat screens, 3 recliners, and even got me a bathtub in the back. And we start rolling around the United States carrying a message, you know? And the big book says, few of us are fortunate enough to do that. I just happened to fall in that category because of having had a spiritual awakening. So anyway, and as a result, then when it got to change, that was May, and then I happened to go, we were just riding around, and then it got cold in October. And you're not going to believe what happened. Okay. We went to Hawaii, and we were there for, I say, 4 months. And I said to my husband, I said, honey, add up. You know, it's expensive being over here in Hawaii for 4 months. Daniel, give me the total on how much it's costing. And he took my 10 minutes. He started adding up. And guess what happened? When he gave me the total, I passed out. And then I got up off the floor and I brushed off and I said, okay, I think it's time for us to buy. If we're going to buy, we're going to be in Hawaii this time. We spend this kind of time in Hawaii. Might as well just go and buy a condo. And the condo came like that. It was one more miracle. No mortgage. So I'm grateful to be here to share. It's all in God's will. Knowledge of his will and the power to carry it out. Everything I have today because it's a byproduct of knowledge of his will and the power to carry it out. So I like to end by saying, as a result of living these steps, 1, 2, and 3, peace with God. 4, 5, 6, and 7, peace with myself. 8, 9, peace in the human race. And 10, 11, and 12, peace in the universe, love and service. Now today I have power, purpose, promises, provision, protection, passion, presence, peace, perseverance, persistence, persona, position, possession, potential, practice, prayerful, and a permanent recovery. If it is to be, it is up to me. If I don't go within, I will go without. If I don't stand for something, I'll fall for anything. I'd rather be wrong doing something than wrong doing nothing. I don't go along so that I can get along. My life is my message, and my message is my life. Making a living is not as important as making a life. My outcome is more important than my income. What's on the inside of me is way more powerful than what's on the outside of me. My name is Norma Jean C. Happy, joyous, and free from Waikiki, Hawaii. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Norma Jean. You know, we have time left, and I don't think it's necessary to close early, because there's a lot of folks out there. See a bunch of troublemakers from Brooklyn that I know. And perhaps you all like to share or ask questions of speakers or what have you. So I'm going to be here until 10:30, which is when it closes, which is the time allotted for this particular discussion meeting. So if anybody has a question, a comment, a thought, or what have you, they'd like to make, the subject, the topic here is the Black experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'll welcome any comments, questions, or whatever on that subject, or anything reasonably related to it. Okay. You'll have to speak up so I can hear your question. I'll repeat it so people will know what you said. I don't think there are any floor mics. If you can speak loud enough for me to hear you, I'll repeat the question. If you can come up here, that's fine too, but not everybody will be able to, I guess. I didn't think so. Take your time.
Good morning. My name is Pam, and I'm an alcoholic. I came to this meeting, the topic being the Black experience in AA, and it was so heartening to hear all the presenters talk about the program and how our similarities and not our differences are the most important thing. It's my experience, too. My home group, which is Live and Let Live in St. Paul, Minnesota. I am the token Black person in that group, and I struggle with it, you know, because, first of all, everybody there has just opened their arms and welcomed me from the first day through my four relapses through, you know, I kept coming back, and they kept saying, great, you're here. And it made absolutely no difference. You know, it wasn't about the skin color. It was about, I'm a suffering alcoholic and I need to be here. So that's, I just want to put that out in the context. Now here's what I struggle with, and here's my question. Every once in a while, I look around me and I say, what's wrong with this picture? Why am I the only Black person here? What should I do about that? And frankly, I don't know. I'm amazed and I'm happy to be where I am because, as I said, I'm loved where I am. But I still struggle with it. And I'm asking y'all because I don't know. So if you could speak to that, thank you.
Hi. My name is, again, it's Tom Jasper, moderating this discussion. I'd like to say there's different views on what I'm about to comment on, widely divergent views. I spoke to someone earlier who's sober a long time who has a different view from me. I'll be sober 30 years in a week or so, so I've been around for a little while anyway. I've been around the structure for a long time. But I noticed that in our survey, whereas last time we had a survey, the Blacks in AA were 5% of the population, the AA population. I think in our current survey it's dropped to 3%. Now, to me, in my own experience in AA and around the service structure, that's significant. What we do about it, I'm not sure. if that's a problem, I guess it's whatever one wants to make of it. I see it as a problem personally, but that's me. And I'm not sure what the answer is to that.
Hi, everybody. My name is Mitch, and I'm an alcoholic. And my home group is the St. Nicholas Group back in Harlem, New York. And I'm delighted to be here. I'd like to thank the panel for a wonderful presentation and Tom for chairing. I'm concerned, too, about the numbers with regard to the recent survey that was revealed at the June Service Conference in April, where the percentages, I think, are like 3.2%. And it bothered me, but I also need to recognize what can I do about that particular situation. And I'm aware in my area where I make meetings back there in Harlem, New York, we have about maybe 20 to 25 groups. And when we go to the service meetings, there are about two or three, sometimes just one GSR that represents those groups. So my task is to see just what it is I can do to make service beyond the group attractive to people who make those meetings. And one thing that I've decided to do, I noticed that in our grapevine, our monthly meeting in print, there's a lack of artistry that speaks to black people. For instance, you see the artwork, you hardly see a depiction of our culture, of our ethnicity. And what can I do to change that? And what I think I can do to change it is to learn to write articles. The Grapevine has instruction guidelines how you can do that. I also think that I'll buy a camera so that I can start taking pictures and submit them to the Grapevine. I asked someone to take a picture of my home group, and we sent that along to the Grapevine. It was placed in the section called If Walls Could Talk. So I need to get together with my friends, with my partner, with my home group members, and not push this particular issue under the rug, but to kind of discuss it and just find out what I can do in my own community to make sure that the hand of AA is out there and that my home group is representative in the halls of discussions of the business of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Ted. I'm an alcoholic. I'm from Northern Ontario. This is my first World Conference. Thank you. I had a few things I wanted to say. Being in Northern Ontario, where I was raised, we played hockey. When I was 15, I was rated 50th in Ontario, and I told them in my application form, there were some hockey players that had problems with substances, and I said to myself, I said, if I'm going to be a millionaire, I'll be honest. And because I was honest on my application form, do you jog, do you run, do you smoke cigarettes, yes, 10 to 15 a day, do you drink, yes, 12 to 24 beer a week, do you use drugs, yes, I do. And I wasn't given that opportunity to excel in hockey, but I'm very proud that I'm sober today. September 13th, I'll have 5 years, and... Yes, and I'm 33. When I got into sobriety this time, I got my grade 12 education. I got my construction, my college diploma, 2-year college diploma, and I filled up gas in a tank for the very first time, and as well as I was able to drive, I got my license. So all these accomplishments I've had, and I thank all you people out here, and this is the most black people I've seen, and I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Hello, family. I'm Denise Williams from Concord, Ohio. And you know what? Those 3% of blacks, they're from Cleveland. We got a lot of black AAs in Cleveland. You know, but like I said, I'm from Concord. And you know what? I go to probably a 99.9% white home group. And when I came up here with my sponsor, Wave Nancy. So, you know, I was on the phone talking to a friend of mine in Cleveland, and I was telling him I'm going to come to this black experience meeting. And Nancy said, well, I guess that's where we're going. And that's what AA is all about. This is the only place, this fellowship is the only place that you can go, and color doesn't matter. You know, when we got here, we were driving, I think it was Front Street. We stopping at the light. The guy sees our badge. Do you remember where he was from, Nance? I don't know where he was from, but he came over to the car, stopped traffic. He was white and just hugged and kissed us. You know, there's nothing like this fellowship, international. And that's what last night was all about. You know, 180 countries. And you know what's so unique about it? We're all doing the same damn thing. You know why? Because we're all coming from the same place. Those 12 steps, that big book, Bill W. and Dr. Vibe from Toledo. I mean, from Akron. We're all the same. It's beautiful. Thank you, guys. God bless.
My name is Pete, and I'm a very happy, grateful alcoholic from Miami, Florida. Hi, everybody. You know, I love this meeting. I love you people. And my opinion, when we share experience, strength, and hope, you know, Norma Jean pretty much put it, you know. In my opinion, if we're spiritually fit, the maintenance of our spiritual condition, it doesn't matter what I think of you, what you think of me. None of us has to be born the color of our skin, what the hell country we're born in, who the hell with our education, our environment, we're all the same. It's the way I look at life today. You know, I noticed Redneck in Homestead, Florida. He's living up in Jupiter, Florida now. He went to this meeting one time, and this black fella come up to him. I want to share this. This black fella says, boy, he says, I don't see nothing but white people going into that meeting. And this redneck from Homestead, Florida, looked at this guy. He says, there's no color in AA. He says, you're either sober or you're drunk. Which one are you? And the black guy says, I want to go with you. Thank you very much.
My name is James. I'm an alcoholic. I recovered in Newark, New Jersey, and now I'm living in Florida. And I'd like to say, first of all, I'm a longtime member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a lot of things in my life. One thing that Alcoholics Anonymous gave me, and Norma Jean alluded to it, is the fact of the matter, I came out of a cultural, natural organizational. I was one of the members of an organization that invented Kwanzaa. I was in that organization for quite a few years. I sat down with the likes of the Farrakhans and the Brockers and the Karingas and the Sharpens and all of those people. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. First thing I thought about is that we need to take down Bill and Bob and put up Malcolm and Martin. That's the first thing crossed my mind. I've since learned by the grace of God and from you people, black or white, I've learned that my first requirement in my life is to stay alive. That's my first thing I have to do. And I'm an alcoholic. I am a full-blooded alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous and its principles of this program taught me that I have to do first things first. I have to be sober before I can be anything. Also, the traditions assure me that I'm able to participate in any function in my life that I want to, as long as I don't bring that into Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous has made me grow up and learn the fact of the matter that, yes, I am an African-American, but that has nothing to do with the vodka I drank, nothing to do with all the other things I did to bring me to the point of destruction. Alcoholics Anonymous ensures me that I still have the right. I have African masks, I have African poetry, I have African pictures in my house, but I have a group, me and my wife are the only two black people in it, but it has nothing to do with my sobriety. I agree with the gentleman that just spoke a few minutes ago. If you feel that there is a shortage and that it's a necessity that we have more African Americans in AA, then it's up to the individual to go out and do something about that. Because, see, the situation that I got was that I was in Newark. It was 98% black meetings. I wasn't complaining then, so why should I go to Florida where now it's just me and my wife in 98%? Why should I start complaining now? It doesn't make sense. I'm getting sober. The Alcoholics Anonymous is the same in the all-black meetings. It's the same in the all-white meetings. It doesn't really make a big difference. I have to discover, and I'm just speaking for me, I have to make a decision, what do I want to do first? I have to say first things first. And my first thing I want to do is to stay sober. I'm very happy with Alcoholics Anonymous. There's some things that need to be worked on, but that's things that need to be worked on. I don't have to make it a point of contention. I don't have to make it a point of disunity in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I can take it upon myself to pick up whatever hammer I want to pick up and build whatever I want to, long as it doesn't violate the Unity of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I love, and which has made it so that I can stand up here at this podium and put in my 2 cents. And thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.
I'd like to give one last round of applause for our three speakers. And thank you all for being here. Our time here is up. I think people for the next meeting are already sitting down. Thank you very much.